Welcome to AgriTalk Podcast with me, Philip Keitang. Today we are going to talk about parasitism, and with me in studio is Dr. David Obiero, who is a vet by profession and a lecturer at the Masai Mara University. Welcome, Dr.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about what is parasitism.
Okay, I'll start by talking about what is a parasite. So a parasite is an organism that lives either on top, on, or inside an animal. So as it lives, it essentially causes harm to the animal. So you find that its metabolic system is basically essentially tied to the animal, mm-hmm. whereby it cannot be able to live without being able to extract something from the animal.
Okay. Now that you mentioned these external and internal, let's start by talking about the external parasites. Which are these external parasites, and what do we need to know about them in terms of control measures?
So external parasites, the common ones involve are lice, ticks, mites, flies, and mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. So those are the common external parasites.
Okay. And when we talk about these parasites that affect livestock, what kind of livestock are we talking about when we talk about parasites on livestock? Are we just talking about cows and sheep, or we are also talking about the poultry, all the livestock in the farm?
Yes. So, of course, these parasites, you find that some of them are species specific. So you find that you have external parasites for all animals. This is also including even wild animals. So this can include poultry, the domestic and the wild poultry, even the pheasants, the even if it's peacocks. You find that you also have parasites for camels, cows, goats, donkeys. The entire spectrum has both the internal and external parasites.
Okay, so how do we control these parasites?
So you find that the control measures can be normally grouped for the internal and the external parasites. So for the external parasites, there is the pharmacology way, whereby you have the anti- or ectoparasiticides or antiparasitic drugs that target the animals. So these are essentially drugs that we recommended by your local animal health provider that essentially target the animal itself and are given at specific dosages and at specific groups of drugs that are you work with together with your local vet will be able to best advise. Because you have that particular compounds are authorized to be used in particular areas so that you don't have a situation of resistance. So that is the pharmacology way. Of course, there are other ways of targeting and reducing and controlling the external parasites. For example, within the husbandry management practices, whereby you design the boma of your animals in such a manner that discourages multiplication or even of the animals. This can involve having good drainage for in the boma to reduce accumulation of dung, manure. It can also involve using material that discourages habituation of the parasites. It can also involve having good lighting, ventilation, because of course to reduce humidity. Humidity also encourages this, especially the internal parasites, to stay for long in the environment. Yes, those are some of the controls.
Okay, for livestock that roam around, what are some of the control measures to ensure that when they leave in the morning, they don't come back with these parasites in the evening?
So for the animals that move around, it is essentially not very easy to control parasites, because you find that, for example, the ticks and the worms are good. Most of them are actually in the vegetation. Within your program for managing these animals, you normally take into consideration what you're going to do in those pastures to reduce the load of either the ticks or the worm burden. So reinfection is very high for animals that move around. It's not very easy to control ticks and worms when the animals are moving around, because you also don't want to abuse drugs so that you create resistance, and so that you have within the area, you create a situation whereby before you even sell the animal, it is resistant to particular parasites. So we try to encourage farmers to define their area for pastures, because there are particular activities that need to be done within where they are growing their pasture to reduce the worm inside the animal. Because you see that around 80% of the parasites, the internal parasites, are actually come from the pastures. The worms, their larval form stay in the pastures. It is now the, it's only 10% that will be in the animal, but most of them are actually in the pasture.
Okay. So also in the farm, we have other animals like dogs and cats. What are their contribution, especially to the spread of this, especially parasites in the farm, and how can farmers control this?
So you find that there are particular parasites, especially worms, that have developmental stages within dogs, but intermediate stages within the livestock itself. So it's important to recognize this, and this is information that the vet will happily engage when he comes to a farm. So that essentially, when you're controlling, for example, the worms, the dog is not left out. You want to avoid losses along the value chain that can be caused by worms whereby the larval stage was in the ruminant, but the animal that you're supposed to target with regards to controlling the parasite is the dog. And it's important also to appreciate that some of these parasites have zoonotic potential. So what it will either, you'll find that the larval stage would be in the ruminant or inside the human body. So it will have a health impact. And some of them, for example, the hydatidosis is very fatal. It's fatal. So you find that if a holistic approach is taken to the management, you'll be able to control diseases that will affect your income from the animal, and also you'll be able to protect your family and yourself.
Okay. There's a word you've used, zoonotic diseases. What does that mean?
So zoonotic diseases are diseases that can be transmitted from the animal to human beings and vice versa. There are also diseases that can come from human beings to animals. That is the
description. Can you give us examples of maybe one or two?
Of course, like the one I've said is very common. There is, for example, hydatidosis, whereby you find that the adult tapeworm is in the dog, but larval stages can be found in cattle and also in man.
Okay.
Of course, you have other common examples like rabies also. That rabies also has zoonotic disease, but that is of viral nature.
Okay.
And of course, COVID is also viral. It's also a zoonotic disease.
That's very important. Now, how do we control, especially this for the external parasites? How does a farmer need to go around controlling these parasites?
So now, for external parasites, you can, the husbandry management practices help a lot. You know, this will complement what the vet and your animal health provider has mentioned in terms of disease control. So with a disease control program, you'll be able to control the parasites, maybe using medicines and drugs. And also now, with management-wise, you'll be able to look at issues to do with making structures that are proofed from external parasites, so that they can't be able to access your bomber. For example, having a net covering your, if it's a cattle bomber, or making the animals cannot be able to access where the insects normally breed. For example, you find that in water puddles, the animal might, when they are going there to drink, they may get stung by these insects, and some of them might be able to transmit other even more deadlier parasites. So you find that such husbandry management practices are helpful, in addition to what you'll be doing in terms of veterinary medicines, in terms of controlling them using drugs.
Okay. What are some of the economic losses that a farmer can incur if they don't control this parasite?
So you find that some of the economic costs that the farmer might maybe call a vet for is death. But what is actually their greatest economic loss will be the chronic loss of production parameters. For example, if it's a poultry farmer, the farmer will be losing a lot of money from selling animals that are underweight, if it's broilers, selling less eggs if they are layers. If you're doing feedlots in a beef ranch, you will find that the animals at weight will be at maturity will be of less weight. If you're doing dairy, you'll get less milk. And again, if you're doing dairy, you'll find that even the heifers getting to maturity will take longer. And of course, if you take longer, you'll start getting milk later. So those types of losses are actually the underlying, the silent economic losses, which actually are more than mortality itself, the death of the animal.
You talked about parasites like the tsetsefly, the ticks, and the mosquitoes. When it comes to the hide, how do they affect the quality of the hide at the end of the season for the farmer?
For ticks, you will find that they have very elaborate mouthparts. So those mouthparts actually puncture their skin and leaves small holes. So you find that it's an entry point for other bacterial conditions that may further deteriorate the hide, because you find that they might cause abscesses, small abscesses. And of course, there's the mechanical injury, and how it heals, of course, you lose the quality. So the tick itself mechanically will damage. It will create an avenue for other conditions that will further deteriorate the quality of the hide.
Okay. I've seen out there farmers take their cattle for a dip every Saturday. Is that cycle enough, or is it too much? Maybe you can tell us.
So you will find that normally what we do is we do what we call strategic control of ticks, and even similarly we do strategic deworming, whereby maybe you'll find that from advice from the local practitioners, they've been told that it is adequate. But we try to look at it from a situation whereby we look at what is the type of tick. Is this tick particularly, based on its life cycle, will I have broken its life cycle if I do what twice a year? So it is very sometimes misleading to just go and copy what other people are doing. But there, if they work backwards with their local health practitioners, animal health practitioners, they'll be able to tell the frequency that's required.
Now let's move to the internal parasites. Maybe tell us a little about when we talk about internal parasites, which parasites are these, and which animals or livestock in the farm that are affected by this?
So for internal parasites, the most common ones of veterinary importance, we have worms. And for worms, we have the flatworms, we have roundworms. The flatworms are like the tapeworm and the flukes. And of course, we also have what we know call protozoan parasites. So here we have common ones like Theilaria, the ones that cause the disease that most farmers know as East Coast fever. We also have, within the protozoan parasites, we have tissue coccidians, like the ones commonly find in poultry and also in other ruminants, but most significantly in poultry. Yes, those are some of the common. And of course, the trypanosomes, those are blood parasites.
Okay. And how do a farmer tell that my livestock or my animal is suffering or having internal parasites?
You'll find that most farmers will call you because a production, if it's not death, it's a production parameter. It'll tell you that the milk has gone down. So that's when you come and after a vet has done a battery of tests, we'll be able to say that, hey, okay, this animal is sick. He'll take samples to confirm, but from the farm level, you'll find that most of these diseases will cause a negative shift in a production parameter. So that is the most obvious thing that farmers will tell you, even new farmers. But once they start staying with the animals for long, they'll be able to pick other signs. The animal is not eating, it looks dull. But of course, somebody just started the business, will probably note the production parameter.
So how? What are some of the control mechanisms for internal parasites? And how often should a farmer do this?
Okay. So for internal parasites, similarly, you'll find that people have, there's a blanket one that people normally use, but we'll recommend that the science has moved such that we're now looking at control at an individual animal level, if possible. So you find that generically people have been doing like maybe 3 months for deworming every 3 months, but you find that you might be deworming an animal every 3 months that initially did not have even any worm burden. So you create a resistant population in an animal that might now spread into, you might spread the resistance into the other parasite population. So you find that it is ideal to work with your vet to be able to come up with what is ideal for every individual animal where possible. So of course there are the drugs that I've mentioned, where what I've mentioned will go hand in hand with the frequency and the particular compound you give the animal. But of course, within the farm, there are also things that you can do. For example, there is pasture management to reduce the load of inside the worms. Within pasture management, the farmer can explore paddocking to reduce load within particular sections of the farm. They can explore things like you having the animals go to pasture with particular age groups, whereby they start with the young ones. The young ones access the pasture when the pasture has not been accessed by the older ones. They are the first ones. And then the older ones come because they are more vulnerable to the parasites. Mm. And then, of course, the farmer can also explore things like having two different species grazing together. That one also breaks the life cycle of the internal parasites like the worms. Whereby, for example, they can have a goat graze with a sheep or a cow graze with a horse or a donkey. Because the parasites are very specific. So their life cycle will be broken because you'll find that for the cow might access grass with a parasite for the donkey, so the parasite will not be able to develop. The donkey parasite cannot develop in the cow. So the life cycle will be broken. So they can also try something like that within the context of pasture management. Of course, there's also nutrition. They can look at the nutrition. They can ensure that the plane of nutrition is high so that the innate immunity of the animal can best deal with any attacks from these parasites. So those are some of the things that the farmers can be looking at.
Okay. When it comes to these control measures, is the control measure for someone who is practicing zero grazing the same as someone who is practicing pastoralism?
They are very different. The person who's practicing pastoralism will have a much more difficult time controlling, for example, ticks and controlling worms, because you find that these parasites are in the pasture. And for the person who's, for example, doing zero grazing and maybe just has a small paddock where he either harvests the pasture or leaves the animal to go and graze before going back to the zero grazing unit, that farmer will have an advantage in terms of controlling parasites, because the measures that he can do within the pasture, just for example, like having it active, having it tilled, or even growing crops on it, that one also disrupts the life cycle of these parasites. For example, tilling will bring about worms, and there are worms that actually feed on the eggs of parasites that are dangerous to cattle. So you find that this person will have an advantage. For the one that moves around with the animal, will have a more difficult time in controlling these parasites, because he's feeding on pasture that he does not know the history of as he moves along. And at the end of the day, the animal might pick up things.
Okay. Yeah. Are there internal parasites that are fatal to the animal that can cause death?
Yes. You'll find that at a particular threshold, most of them can, if you have a chronic infection, and of course, if the animal is already disadvantaged in terms of a developing immune system, like for the young ones, you'll find that a heavy infestation will either by itself cause death or create an environment for other pathogens to actually be able to attack and now cause death. But of course, it's worth mentioning, like for example, in sheep, there's a parasite known as Himonkas that sucks blood and actually can cause death in a very, very short period of time. And it's very difficult to actually manage once it settles within the flock. Yes.
So for farmers, are there signs that they can tell that my animal is suffering from an internal parasite?
You'll find that depending on the experience of the herds person, they might be able to notice the actual worms in the stool. Some of them might be able to notice the hair coat becoming what they call starry hair coat, but that is very unspecific. But with a high worm burden, you'll actually be able to see the worms in the stool of the animal.
As a vet, do you think as a country we've done enough to manage parasites within the country?
The efforts are there, but I think we can improve. with regards to the resources, the physical resources, like within the devolved setup, within the counties, we can have more people there. Because you find that things like, there are certain things within disease control, for example, that the government used to do in the past, but cannot be done right now. But just having the masses, a critical mass within those offices is very helpful with regards to prevention, with regards to extension, delivery, and being able to reach farmers in areas where by a private practitioner will not want to practice.
We've talked a lot about the vet. How important is a vet to a livestock farm?
A vet is very important. It's like the equivalent of a foundation stone when building a house. You'll find that you'll be able to walk this journey of being a livestock farmer with a vet to its entirety. Because contrary to what people think, that we should not get to know your vet only when your animal is sick. You should start the business with the vet, whereby you get to know the vet when you're starting the business. Because you'll be able to avoid a lot of trial and error. And with it, of course, with the errors, you'll also be able to avoid a lot of losses. Because you find that you might go to a farm and the problems are actually in the designs of the structure. Somebody has invested $3 million in a poultry structure that is defective. Would you rather have this vet come before you design, or be given an advice of that nature when you are so much inside the investment?
Mm-hmm.
So they're the equivalent of an architect when building a house.
Okay. And do we have enough vets in this country?
Of course, the numbers compared to the animals and the farmers we have is disproportionate.
Okay. Agriculture is a devolved function. Do you think the national and the county governments are doing enough to bring in more vets into the system?
What we can say is that there are positive. There are some wins in that with the devolution, you found that now within those counties, at least there is a veterinary office with a county veterinary officer and at least an assistant. But I can say that more can be done. There are some expansive counties whereby you find that still their reach is not enough. And also in terms of other resources that they could have, you find that can be improved.
Do you think the practices that we do now, or our farmers practice out there in terms of controlling pesticides, are good enough as for now?
It's always a learning process, and of course you find that depending on the area you are in, you find that some farms are advanced when others are starting. For example, if you go to areas that were historically white highlands, you find that there's a lot of base knowledge that is very good. Their farmers are not starting from a low level. They know a lot about milk, for example, if it's dairy, because those areas were identified for dairy in the past, you find that they're not starting from zero. They know a lot. They know a lot historically that has been passed on, either through the community systems. But some areas whereby they are starting new practices, you find that you have to start from. They start from the basic level. So it's very varied.
Being a vet and a lecturer at the same time, what advice will you give to young people out there who are not looking, or who think being a vet is a dirty job and maybe doesn't pay well?
Well, what I can say is that there's a lot of opportunity, being that it's a profession that is tied with food production. So you find that there's always opportunity. And of course, being vet is one, and there's also other levels of participating in this, whereby you can be a certificate holder, which is a BSc graduate. This is a course that we are offering at Masai Mara University. So all these contribute to the health of the animal, and also there are creative ways of looking at it. I always see it as the information we have gives us an opportunity to become an even better farmer. We don't always have to be on this spectrum whereby we are going to look at the farmer. We can be a farmer, the informed farmer ourselves. We're the one who are creating those innovations and creating these model farms for both income and for both learning.
Do we have quack vets out there? And what is the danger of having a quack vet when it comes to fighting parasites?
So we have quacks. They're just quacks. So we have them there, and we have a board known as the Kenya Veterinary Board that is working very hard to be able to identify them, and actually, because it's an illegality, so they are normally identified and prosecuted. And they actually registered vets like myself and other practitioners, we have a duty to report. So naturally, like what I've mentioned, when you find an individual that is masquerading as a veterinarian or an animal health provider, you are at risk, because this is your investment in terms of the animals. They are at risk in terms of, first of all, the extremists, of course, recommending issues that can lead to the death of the animals, recommending advices that can lead to resistance in terms of parasites when you want to control, and even public, they are of public health concern. Because somebody might recommend, for example, if I come to your farm, there is info, based on our training, I'll be able to tell you that use this medicine to control ticks, but for 30 days, you are going to pour that milk, because that the medicine that I've given is going to be excreted also in milk. That is how the animal behaves in terms of when it's getting trying to get rid of the substances that you've given it. So you find that, of course, this information that they will not have or might not have or will adulterate in some way. So you find that it's a public health risk. You'll be consuming the drugs from your animals personally at the household level, and of course even the people that you're going to sell those products to, whether it's antibiotics, whether it's ectoparasite drugs, you find that these people can potentially become very, very dangerous.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. David Opiero, for sparing time to come and be part of this podcast. And that is all the time we had for today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.